Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Turn It A Punk Classics, a show where we take old episodes of Turn It A Punk that have been lost from the internet and return them to their previous glory by sticking them back on the feed. You can find this podcast on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and all other forms of social media. Well, that's pretty much it. At Turn It A Punk, you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Left For Damien. I play in a band. More information can be found at fuckedup.cc. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy another TOAP classic.
Check 1, 2, 3, 4. All right.
Okay.
Now I'm just thinking, Scott.
What do you want?
If I hold it here, that's going to catch both our voices. Check, you talk.
But you're not going to hold it the whole time.
I'm going to hold it right here.
That's gonna suck.
It won't suck.
You can tag me in. I'll take a couple hits off of
it. Yeah, but like, let's hold it for an hour.
I'm good. You're not gonna hold it for an hour?
I'm gonna hold it for an hour.
That sucks. when you're feeling like you need a 5-minute break, just go like this to me and
you'll take over?
I'll take a 5.
All right.
I'm not holding it for an hour, though.
That's what I'm saying. I'm gonna hold it for an hour.
Hey,
you think it's gonna be a 2-hour podcast?
Whatever. We'll
it's see. A little ambitious.
Hope it's 20 minutes, because I'm an old, bitter, jaded man.
You're not old.
Okay.
You're not old. You're my inspiration.
How old are you?
36.
You're fucking getting there.
I'm getting there.
You're not there yet, though.
I'm not there yet.
Are we rolling right now?
Yeah, we're rolling now.
Oh, shit.
What's up? Scott.
I bet your podcast don't get too many what's ups.
I get what's up.
Right.
I've had Nick Woj on the show. I've had Antoine on this show.
Okay.
There's people say what's up on this show.
All right.
But I'll tell you one thing I haven't had many of so far.
Buffalo Hardcores?
Buffalo Legends. Because Scott, you, my friend, in addition to being my friend, are someone that I respect ridiculous amounts for what you do on that stage and for inspiring me. But this is not about me. This is about you. And I want to know how you got into punk. So how'd you get into punk, Scott?
Oh, that's a pretty good one, and an easy one, and one that I like. I like happy to answer. Up closer, better.
That's fine. Well, I've got a level program, so it'll be fine.
So I gotta give all the credit to my brother, who's for sake of clarification, my stepbrother. You know, we have different mothers and fathers, but my father married his mother and brought us together, and it's kind of like I often do wonder if that collision never happened, where I would have ended up.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of think in the like jock drunk world.
That's where you think your other path was?
Yeah, for sure. I still kind of took that path in my own way, but yeah, I'd say I was like into, I guess I'll go back. The first thing I'll say is, what?
Back up a little bit.
Back up. My mom.
Yeah.
Her boyfriend, when I was young, gave me Black Sabbath on vinyl, first two records, self-titled and Paranoid. So that's my introduction to insanity.
Yeah.
But on the punk, did you say what's your introduction to punk?
Yeah, what was the first time you ever heard it?
Okay, because I'm not like huge punk guy.
I know, and this is what
huge punk
we're gonna
guy.
We're gonna
just,
get into this.
It just click that you said punk. But definitely my introduction to hardcore and everything definitely came through punk.
Yeah.
So, yeah, at a point, I moved in with my father, who was living with my, had remarried, and now living with my stepbrother and my stepmom. And he was definitely, he's 4 months younger than me, so he's my age, but just a touch younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, it'd be a good question to see his introduction to punk, because I don't really know that.
Well, I'll have him on the episode.
Yeah, you and him could talk so long, because he's, you know, just like me and you can talk for so long.
Oh, we can go.
That's a really great question. I wonder what his introduction to punk is.
Well, do you remember, like, did you ever see the Ramones on TV or, like, on the radio? Like, what is Buffalo Goo Goo Dolls? Was that?
Man, I wish he was here with me, because my memory's terrible, but yeah. He recently said to me, me and you saw the Ramones in X year at this show. Like, he's got it all. He's got the brain. And I just fried my brain. He's fried his brain too, but somehow he retained so much. So yeah, my introduction to punk is through him. We would, you know, go see, like, you know, the Forgotten Rebels.
That's, oh, absolutely, Toronto from thing. Hamilton. Yeah,
we would go. Okay, Hamilton. We would go see them. We would go see the Goo Goo Dolls. Like,
yeah,
I've seen the Goo Goo Dolls for like 75 people on stage saying, we live in our practice space. We're going on tour. Please throw us clothes on stage because we have no money. Like, that's the intro to the Goo Goo Dolls for me.
Because they would play, like, I think that's the thing is, like, unless you're from Buffalo or maybe heard their first record.
You just think it's like the band
from City of Angels.
Their first record, I think, is on
Twin Tone. Is it on Twin Tone?
They did Metal Blade real records, but they might have like a self-release type thing. But as far as I can remember, they're very Metal Blade, but they had songs like Don't Beat My Ass with a Baseball Bat, I'm Addicted Because I Want to Be, which is just like thrashy, just like gritty music.
And they also played, like, there's footage of them playing on like a Buffalo TV show too. I remember seeing on...
I might have watched it so many times, I'm going to say I don't know. Memory-wise, the Quakes. That rockabilly band.
Okay, I don't know.
That's from Buffalo. They're like a huge rockabilly. Like, we just used to go see all sorts of things.
Carnival of Souls? Is that a band from Buffalo?
I'm going to go with no.
Sorry, Scott, about that. But yeah, you were saying some of the shows you went to in like 86, you saw Jell Biafra?
Yes, Spoken Word. Butthole Surfers opened up for him. This was at college. My brother's big into like Group Sex, Circle Jerks, Dead Kennedys, all that stuff. But it never really like took over my life.
Yeah.
I was exposed. I was into it. Knew I wasn't a normal fucking person. I knew that, you know, I was never going to be like all the people in my high school and all of that, but it didn't really get me. And Night Flight, the cable channel, Another State of Mind, The Social Distortion goes on tour in a school bus. And the whole thing, I think probably, you know, captivated by you getting a fucking book your own, the whole thing of that, like booking your own tour and stuff, but it's also really punk orientated. They're like all dyeing their hair and cutting their hair and looking crazy and stuff. But then towards the end of it, they stay at the Discord House and Minor Threat's introduced. And it's really cool. They show them come in the Discord House with a camera, walk down the stairs, and Minor Threat's practicing, jamming, and they all kind of have like the shaved heads. And you know, for all intents and purposes now, Minor Threats maybe leans more towards a punk band than a hardcore band, or somewhere in the middle. But for me, that was my first introduction to hardcore, seeing Minor Threat practice. And they talk about, you know, they don't want to be fuck-ups, they want to be more positive, and they show the lyrics. And they probably describe straight edge, and for the sake of this whole podcast, I've never been straight edge. I've been into into underground for a long time. And
people still ask me about that. Like, adults that have known and grown up with your music will be like, was Scott ever straight edge?
Yeah, I still get it once in a while, but I think just because, to get off topic a little bit, I think just because I always had the shaved head and the Georgetown sweatshirt and the, you know, I wore a mouthpiece shirt because I love straight edge hardcore. I think it, you know, but yeah, never straight edge. Yeah. So we'll get to, that'll come up, like being at a judge show, drinking beer and smoking weed, but whatever. So
you see minor
saw the minor threat thing, and I think I was like, kind of like felt that tingle, and I went to Cavages, the record store at the mall near my house, and bought the minor threat thing. I don't know what it's called, where Ian's looking down.
Oh, like the Jabbar on vinyl?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just the self-titles, the 2 7-inches, right? Yeah.
So I got that. That was probably the first hardcore record I ever bought, and close to the same time, DRI played a place called The Turtle in Niagara Falls, USA. And the bill was DRI, Gangrene, Holy Terror, Goo Goo Dolls. So I'll say that's like officially my first hardcore show.
Was Holy Terror from Buffalo? Or are they just on the tour?
No, they're like a metal. They're a metal.
Yeah, I know
fan.
That metal band. Yeah,
I don't know. Not from Buffalo, okay. But
so that's your first show.
Yeah.
That's a good first show.
Yeah, and I don't know what The Turtle is. Like, never a show there again. But in my head, it was like 1,000 people. Like, probably DRI's prime or drawing prime.
Yeah.
And crazy. And at that show, of course, I'm with my brother, and we picked up a 7 Seconds show with, fuck, man, I want to say Hunger Artists and Soulside and Zero Tolerance.
Whoa.
So we go from a huge venue, like the big hardcore crossover thing at the time, to the River Rock Cafe, which is, I give all the glory to for showing me hardcore. So we go to the River Rock Cafe, 1988, 87, see 7 Seconds, we see Zero Tolerance, which, if you're from Buffalo, that's your like holy grail of local bands. And then it was over. Over, game over. I, you know, before that, I cared about football and playing sports and basketball and anything, and it was just over. Didn't care about anything for ever. Just going to shows.
Were you already into rap music at this point, too? Hip-hop and stuff?
Yeah. Also, like, early on in that time, UTFO, Houdini, mm-hmm. Run-DMC, the real early rap stuff, also into that. Had a pair of parachute pants and stuff like that. So it's like a learning experience. You don't really know. You get into these things and you see the record covers and you kind of want to be like it. But the back of your mind, you know, you're like a white kid from the suburbs of Buffalo. So you look a little weird with the parachute pants, but fuck it, you go for it. And it goes on from there, you know?
Well, speaking of going on from there, so where you see Zero Tolerance, and is that become your band, I guess, at that point?
The next thing I can remember, and this is like, this has got to be coolest day of my life. There's the record store in Buffalo, Home of the Hits.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and at this point too, you're like, there's no, you don't know anything. You don't, there's no ego about yourself or these bands. There's no like, I go to hip-hop shows sometimes now, and I don't know anyone. There's asking to be on the guest list isn't even an option. You don't, backstage isn't even an option. You just go to these hip-hop shows, you watch the artists, you feel the energy, and then the show's over and you go home. And I miss that so much. But this is what it was like at that day. I didn't know anyone in any band. I couldn't ask for a free record. Mm-hmm. I walked into Home of the Hits and these people didn't know anything about me. So here's another little weird story. I remember this kid, Steve Pellini, I want to say his name is. A kid that lived near me and my brother but went to a Catholic school. and was kind of, I want to say, down with zero tolerance, because they were all like, if you look at the old zero tolerance stuff, they had like Catholic songs. I think they all went to Catholic schools.
Okay.
So they were probably from all over Buffalo, but went to Catholic high schools. And this kid was kind of like in that scene, and I don't remember exactly how this happened, but one day he gave me, so I'm going from Minor Threat, Social Distortion, gives me a dubbed cassette, Don't Forget the Struggle on one side, Victim and Pain on the other side. Whoa. And I don't know what he said to me, like, check this out, like, oh, you're into Minor Threat, I think you'll really like this. Again, game over.
Yeah.
Game over. I don't know how, maybe did some research through Thrasher, maybe just saw some pictures and went to Home of the Hits. And I don't know why, but there was a little seven inch section near the cash register, and just flipped through the records, and I bought Sick of It All, 7-inch, all four Rev records. No for an Answer, 7-inch, Chain of Strength, 7-inch, and
Side by Side?
It was Side by Side. Yeah, I was about to say GB, but it wasn't. Side by Side. So those records had probably all just kind of come out within the last year or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably just looked at the layout and saw these dudes got shaved heads. These guys are jumping like Minor Threat. I probably saw some pictures of Warzone and AF, and was like, bought all four of those records in one day. And that's the coolest thing. And then just went home and like, had my little turntable, listen to them, and then from there you see the thank you list and the shirts they're wearing, and you go to Home of the Hits every time you have $10, and look at Fly. You'd go to Home of the Hits and they had the little like cork board,
yeah,
whatever.
The fire wall.
Yeah, so
yeah.
There's, I'm seeking a guitarist, I have a record label, this show, and then just.
So
35,000 shows later, we're right here in this van.
So like, but Buffalo was a stop for all those Rev bands, right? Like
everybody.
Everyone came through there. So yeah. Were you like at this point trying to go to shows every weekend, or was it still?
It just, everything just changed then. I went from like a kid that cared about sports a lot to just, you know, and I think, not saying my brother followed me, but my brother took the same steps as me. Mm-hmm. We just became hardcore kids, like 1,000%. Like any, but also hardcore kids that lived in the suburb, didn't have a car, had other shit going on where you couldn't just make it to everywhere anytime. But our priority in our life every day was getting to every show possible. Yeah. And I think like for the most part, we went to, you know, every show we could. So, and the River Rock, too, was like one place. You know, now shows are, it was just one place, one promoter. Mm-hmm. You could find out about the show. There was a radio show, and you could just go there. Yeah, and, too, also, like, there wasn't a show. Like, now, living in L.A., and I'm sure here, if you're open-minded, you can go to a show every night. Then there would be one show a month. And it was only 200 people, but every single hardcore kid would be there. You would just make, you had to be there. Like, mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. And that's what it was. And at that point, I couldn't, you know, later on, Syracuse, Erie, Toronto. Yeah. But at that point, it was just getting to that show.
So who were some of the local bands? Were there, like, when you started going to shows locally, were there local hardcore bands already happening?
There was definitely Zero Tolerance.
Yeah, ZT.
Quickly after that, there was. There was definitely a Solid State, which was pre-Snapcase. Definitely almost the same band. Probably The Watchmen.
New Balance. New Balance became Zero Tolerance,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's before my time, but, you know, you do a little bit of history checking and you find out about New Balance.
Yeah, yeah.
No Joke was already going on. That's maybe it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was like the second wave, which would be not the second wave of Buffalo hardcore, but my second wave, which would be like Slugfest, Discontent, Against All Hope, whatever the bands that I was all friends with. And we would all, you know, play with all the bands we just mentioned, but we were like a step younger than them, and also got the stink eye from them for a minute, yeah. You know, and
the new breed,
right? Which is the way it should be.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think Slugfest start. Let's say this was '88. Slugfest probably started, I think, 1990 is our first show, and yeah. Well, so you do what everyone does. You look at these people and say, "I can do this. Let's start a band."
Well, yeah, like, and which brings, you know, you obviously are. You know, I had Chris Callahan, a friend of yours and mine, too. But, like,
he's like got a little cult following, huh?
Yeah, but I think, and I would say you as well. You are, you know, like, I described him as, like, one of the few people that you can look at everything you've done as a vocalist as being a career. You know, like, you've always been Scott Vogel. Like, he's been Chris Callahan in every band. But right. Your sound's changed with each of these bands, but it's like you are the vocalist.
If
like,
you know, then you
a journeyman.
You know. He's also, I don't know about now, but he for a long time, he was the only person that, like, I was Scott Slugfest to him.
Yeah.
Like, for, like, I had been in, like, three more bands, and I was always Scott Slugfest to him, which is cool, because he's like, you're old enough to, like, know. Like, yeah. He's really cool. When we did Warped Tour, like, 2 years ago, Tara did Warped Tour, he was, like, working.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, man, how are both of us still here doing this? And, like, you know. But yes, I have a lot of respect for that dude, and I think it's really cool. And he's done it in a way where he's not a sucker. He'd never sold out.
No.
He's not a dork, you know. So many people have come and gone, and he just has a catalog of realness. And that's really kind of like Erba, you know. He's like,
yeah, exactly.
Catalog of realness.
Exactly.
And I mean, I don't want to put myself in the same category, because I know, like there's been little weird steps in the way that of shit I've done, but I look at these people and it's really impressive, because they never took the money path, mm-hmm. or the sellout path, or the cool guy path, or the change my vocal path and stuff like that. So.
But I think, like, he, you know, to get back to what I wanted to say, like, he is someone that I'm fascinated by, because, you know, he has become, like, the atypical or archetype of a hardcore vocalist, and you are the same way. What made you want to sing? Were you ever drawn to anything else in the band?
This amazing voice. Yeah, but you know, honestly, I was thinking I was going to say this before, but it just didn't come out. I saw that band Solid State, and
yeah.
This is definitely basically Snapcase.
With the original singer.
With the original singer, Chris Gallus, and Daryl was on bass, and they had a couple different drummers, and Scott Dressler, who ended up being in Snapcase for a while on guitar. And I remember, like, me and my brother would go to any show, and, like, you know, you'd go to a smaller local show. I want to get to a cool point with Slugfest, but you'd go to a smaller local show, and it's like, literally like 20 kids, but the room's not empty because the River Rock was so small. And I remember watching them, and their singer Chris had such a cool stage presence, shaved head, would bounce off the walls, and I would just be like, yo, I want to do that. Like, mm-hmm. I think I can do that. And that was it. So to get to the Slugfest thing, this is a good lead-in. Me and my brother were going to the River Rock so much.
Yeah.
And their owner, the owner was this guy. What was his name? John, I can't remember his name. We'd go there so much and, like, talk to him so much, and he told us he played drums. So he was like, you want to start a band? So now we're starting a band with a man.
How old was he?
Hold on, I got a fucked up problem going on.
I lost my water. I don't even know where I put it. Look at this.
He was, like, older.
Terror accommodates.
He was, like, older, yeah.
So how old are you guys? Like, what's the
difference? We're, like...
What's the age difference?
We're, like... We're like freshmen.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe sophomore, whatever that is. He's like a man. And he's like, I don't know how it came up, I'll never know, but basically, let's say, like, you know, he was the dude. He did sound there, he booked the shows, mm-hmm. there, he was just this dude, and he wasn't very old. But we were like, let's just say we're like, yo, we want to start a band. You know any drummers? And he's like, I play drums. And he's also like, I own this place so we can practice here. And I also book bands. So our first show will be with Judge. Okay, so Slugfest has a really cool start where we get to play cool shows. He put us on a Primus show, which I think we got bumped off the show because they're like, the sound was fucked up. But we got on all these cool shows, and we had a place to practice, and we had an inn. But on the flip side, it was me, my brother, another dude, and two men. So, like, you know. And
at least you had rides.
I also tell this story. Yeah. We had this bass player, John's friend, whose name, fuck man, his name was Fuckem. F-U-C-K, little squiggly E-M. Okay. And he also played in a Kiss cover band. And do you know any of this?
No.
Okay. And God, this is Slugfest. For people like listening to this, the minority that know Slugfest and they think they know about Slugfest, they're going to get like a real treat here.
This is blowing my mind.
So Slugfest's original bass player is named Fuckem. He also plays in a Kiss cover band. In a very cool way, Slugfest covers Symptoms of the Universe by Black Sabbath and also God of Thunder by Kiss. We play a show. This is going to sound crazy, but it's just true. We play a show, let's say, on Halloween. Where it might not even have been Halloween. The bass player has to also play with his Kiss cover band, so he shows up to the Slugfest show with his Kiss makeup on. And also in his Kiss cover band, he breathes fire. We do God of Thunder with him breathing fire on
that
a Slugfest stage.
That is fucking awesome.
And I'll attribute to early Cleveland, like 1990, 1991, Confront, Ringworm, Integrity, all those bands, when that scene kind of like, I don't want to say took over in New York, but New York was like kind of like dying down and Cleveland was so close, so all these bands were coming and it was a whole new like metal sound in Buffalo. Like all these bands, like Buffalo kids were into it. But Cleveland kids had that like chip on their shoulder, like we don't really want to be friends. Slugfest plays, breathes fire, covers Kiss, and if you know anything about Cleveland, they love Kiss.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I'm friends with everyone in Cleveland because of that. So my in with Cleveland hardcore wasn't because I was like a badass dude starting fights with construction gloves on. It's because I had a dude that blew fire and we covered Kiss.
Well, there's that story about the human furnace apparently trading one of the reels for The Promise for some Kiss memorabilia. And that's why they can't ever remix The Promise.
I have no idea.
I don't know if that's true or not.
I bet if the furnace had the reels and someone wanted to give him some Kiss shit, he'd probably pass it off. I mean, that doesn't surprise me.
So was Slugfest, like, obviously this guy doing all your shows, you're getting some good shows. Did you guys get a fan base immediately?
Fuck no.
Okay.
I mean, we were probably pretty bad, and that phase of Slugfest was pretty short with him in the band, and man, I don't even know how it happened. Like, I can't even speculate, but before you knew it, those men were out of the band, and we got Tim Redman, who went on to be in Snapcase. He became the drummer of Slugfest, and that's when the band kind of like, you know, we were like this weird oddball band doing all the shit I just described, and then we got like a straight edge drummer, me and my brother, and we still definitely weren't normal. The whole Slugfest thing is just bizarre, like, you know, like, in a weird way, we always had long-haired dudes on instruments, like, just, you know, high school friends that could just play instruments. So,
yeah.
Like, you want to be in the band? We actually play shows? Fuck yeah, I'll be in the band. And, but that's when Slugfest became one step closer to your typical hardcore band. But I don't think we were ever, like, a real typical hardcore band. So
no, even aesthetically, it never really fits with that.
It was crazy, man.
You know, even the reunion or the discography record, which has like, is it like plants on the cover?
Who?
Initial did it.
That was something. It was like a tree.
It's like a tree. Yeah.
Yeah, that was like at a point when you just go to the library
and just
find a weird image, and that was at a point where I was into like Falling Forward and
yeah,
like the Louisville thing, and we were on that label because I was into that, and so it was like slugfest, artistic slugfest, but that those two things don't work, so that was probably a bad move on my point. It's like a weird tree. I don't even fucking know what it is, but yeah.
And it also has that unreleased slugfest song, which is like the hardest one. Temperature is rising, I must let go.
Major and Sedition.
Yeah.
There's for your fucking throne. Yeah, maybe that was a song written for that record.
That song is hard.
I think what happened with Slugfest was,
we're jumping way ahead.
Yeah, but it's a good jump.
Just
want to go for
it. Let's go for it.
So Slugfest starts being more of a more atypical hardcore band. We're not covering Kiss anymore. There's no one above 30 in the band when I'm like 17. And then at this point, we're getting a following. We can definitely play in Buffalo and have a good show. Erie, we probably played. The scene in Buffalo at this point is fucking amazing. So many bands, so many cool shows. But then, as most bands do, things go astray. My brother's not in the band anymore. I mean, I don't want to sound too bitter, but like John Salemi from Snapcase, they're Snapcase at this time, and they're definitely blowing up. Mm-hmm. They're becoming like they signed a Victory. They're like becoming like for hardcore, they're becoming like a big deal and touring and stuff. But they're all still my friends, especially John was my friend. And he called me one day and was like, oh, things are working out good with Tim. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? He's like, he didn't tell you he's in Snapcase now. So I'm just like, okay, Snapcase just stole. I don't want to say steal.
Yeah.
However those things go down. But it was lame. And that ended Slugfest. And I feel like I had a story that why I brought this up, or maybe it's just my...
About the reunion, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, probably. So later on, we did a reunion, was whatever, and put out weird artwork. And I think we went to the studio with my brother and did with Tim. You know, there was a period where I was very anti-Snapcase, but as time goes on, you realize Tim was straight edge and had a lot of talent, and he was in a band with dudes that just smoked weed all the time. Our shirts were like Slugfest blunt, and the other one had a 40-ouncer on it, and we were very, you know, maybe he just saw a better thing in it. Maybe he could have went about it a better way and didn't, but we're all young and learn from our mistakes. And then later we played that reunion show and did the record, and I think that song you were talking about was
A re-record thing?
No, I think it was a new write.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah. I think the 7-inch had never come out on CD.
CD, yeah.
And I think we wrote, we had like maybe a leftover song or two, and then wrote a song or two. And I guess maybe the last Slugfest thing I have to say is somehow, some way, when we recorded that first 7-inch in 1990, which Chris Logan from Chokehold put out.
Oh, yeah, I want to talk about the
Structure Records.
Want to get into the Hamilton connection.
Yes, yeah, somehow the record came out really good. Like, we weren't as good as that sounded. And I'm not saying it's like this mind-altering record, but we were like a pretty shitty band. And somehow the record came out really good. And that's
awesome,
why
yeah.
People still are like, I love Slugfest. And I'm like, okay, that recording, I could see you liking it. But in reality, it wasn't that good. Well, yes, the Hamilton connection.
Yeah, so like, how did that whole, because Chris Logan puts that out, Structure Records, was that his label?
Yes, and I think Jeff had to do with that too.
Well, didn't Jeff have, because Jeff put out the Bloodlet 7-inch.
Same label.
Was the same label? Oh, okay.
I think Chris wanted Slugfest and Jeff wanted Bloodlet.
Okay.
But they did it together, I think, and they did the tape.
Comp. Yeah, Structure Records tape. So actually, that brings up a good point. Was Cinderblock going at the same time? Because it's on the Structure.
Yes. Tape. Maybe the Slugfest song was post. What's the word? When you break up, post he.
God, I'm so tired.
After we broke up. I think Cinderblock came a little bit later.
Okay.
But the Hamilton connection was, to put it in a quick story, Chris Logan, they would Chokehold was going on.
Yeah. Like, had you heard Ted Chokehold come and play Buffalo? Had you heard of them or anything? Or,
you know, and Chris Callahan's band was
Basket Case.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I don't know the whole timeline. I want to say maybe they brought us up to Hamilton, maybe before Chokehold had played Buffalo, or, you know, Chokehold definitely got bigger.
Yeah.
But it was before that. I don't know who played where first, but at some point, Chris was like, I want you to play in Hamilton. We came up here. We played this little, I think, like, floor show, maybe a tiny stage. And this was maybe the first time an out-of-town dude brought us. We crossed the border to that. To us, we were on tour.
Yeah.
Coolest thing in the world. We come up here. We play this cool show where probably a handful of kids had our 7-inch. So there's like a couple people singing along.
Oh, so 7-inch was already out?
Fuck, man. I don't know. Let's just pretend it
was. Okay.
No, it couldn't have been.
No, it couldn't have been.
That's why put it out.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
So, yeah, we come up here and play this show where kids are bouncing off the walls, and it's the coolest thing in the world. And I remember one cool thing, me and Tim Redman, Chris came up to us and probably gave us $50 or whatever and was like, you know, I lost money tonight, but I don't care. This is the greatest thing that ever happened. And we were like, this kid's the coolest kid in the world. Because this is when you're like very anti-business, money, hardcore. It's all about just exactly what he did was the definition of hardcore to you. And it made, drove the stake in that this dude's really righteous. And
mm-hmm.
That's where that relationship began. And, you know, of course, Chokehold then would come to Buffalo, and there was the House for Zach in Hamilton, which was, for, you know, people that don't know, was just as, I don't know if I ever went upstairs there, but I think kids lived upstairs. It was a house.
Yeah, Zach,
and I think
Zach lived there, right?
Yeah, he must have.
And it was like two or three dudes that lived there. I think someone from Burst of Silence lived there too.
I think it was all pretty much based around Burst of Silence.
Okay, yeah.
And they just had this house, and they would just clear out the living room and have bands play there. And Slugfest played there. Earth Crisis played there. Conviction played there, who's one of the most criminally underrated hardcore bands ever. I saw Mayday there. Oh, man, I saw all the Buffalo bands there. You know, they would just, it was just another weekend stop. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a show at House for Zach. That's 45 minutes away. Of course I'm going. And that's probably where the Chokehold Slugfest friendship grew more and more, to the point where Chris said, I'm starting a label and I want to put your band out. And I was like, I actually am going to have my band on 7-inch. I go to Home of the Hits every week and buy 7-inches. This is actually happening. This is the coolest thing in the world. And
it happened.
It happened.
On blue, green, and black vinyl.
I know there's blue. If you would have asked me the colors, I would have said blue. But that's as far as it goes.
I think there's a green, and I know there's a black, too. But we won't make you go down that nerdy path. Right?
If this goes into the vinyl thing, I'm such a
I'm
such a fuck up, because I had cool stuff, and like at one point I owned the Against the Wall test press.
Oh, you did?
Fuck yeah. I owned I had another really cool test press. What was it? I don't know. I had two cool, I can't remember, but Against the Wall, who I still think's really good.
Yeah,
and I had a lot of records and a lot of shirts, but I was never that dude to hold on to it. I just would give them away or trade them, and like, you know, I'd have a fucking Bold shirt in the trunk of my car, and it would get oil on it, so I'd throw it out, like,
yeah,
shit like that. So I'm not a big collectors, numbers, colors type guy.
Yeah, and unfortunately I am, but I will not.
I know, that's why I'm preemptively unstriking.
Okay, but I guess what I wanted to find out is, when did you start playing drums?
Damn, we're going in major reverse.
We're going back.
Have you ever heard of a band called Manic Depression? Buffalo Punk.
Oh, fuck, they have a tape.
Nuclear Winter.
Which has it's like a white and it's red font, Manic Depression.
Probably.
I fucking have that tape.
Okay. So we're going back in reverse. When the punk days, the pre-Slugfest days, I bought or some sort of put together this weird drum set that was different colored drums and cymbals, and my brother played guitar. So the earliest Scott musician, which I'm not so much of a musician, was me on drums and my brother on guitar, and we had this band called Lost Cause. So this is all the punk stuff pre-hardcore that we skipped over. We had a band called Lost Cause that put out a tape. Demo.
You guys have a tape?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, with me on drums.
What? That's amazing. I gotta find this tape now. Oh, God, that's gonna be on the list.
So, Lost.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Cause played some shows, and we Manic Depression was a band from the suburbs of Buffalo, kind of more in our area, but they were like, we were like punk, mini punk, they were like mohawk
real punk,
they were like you them walking down the street was like a, you know, a sight for a sight
a sight, yeah.
Us walking down the street was like, these kids kind of think they're weird, but I don't know how weird they are. But, and I believe, my brother could back this up, I'm pretty certain Manic Depression needed a drummer for the drummer for Up Front on the later Up Front stuff, Tim Schmoyer's from Buffalo, and he was in Manic Depression.
Oh.
So he was a straight edge kid in this big punk, but not big, but visually big punk band.
Yeah.
And he was from Buffalo, and we became friends with them, and I think maybe he moved to Connecticut, New York, whatever, to be an Up Front, and they needed a drummer, and I believe I played a gig or two in this major mohawk punk band.
Whoa.
So that was the drumming. Never very good. Against the Hope too, which is like a really underrated Buffalo band. They had like this weird like mix of the New York thing a little bit, but Dag Nasty, but Iron Maiden, and there's this, if anyone is like, wants to try to find some old Buffalo stuff that's buried, Against All Hope, really, really cool. And I played drums for them too at a certain point.
You did on recordings or just
never
like
recorded
live?
But on there they have a 7-inch called like Abandon All Hope.
Yeah, Abandon All Hope.
Boy, I think me and my brother are both credited
that's awesome.
On the record, but didn't play on it. And, maybe we recorded a demo shit or something, but, and they have a lot of songs up, but.
Yeah.
So, you know, they never said this to me, but I hope they were like, this dude's not good enough because we're actually a really good band and this guy can't play drums. That's what I hope happened. I don't know what happened. But yeah, really good band. So that's my drumming start. I feel like you were getting to Fade Away.
I was going to go to Fade Away. Well, I was going to say what after Slugfest kind of, you know, falls apart or breaks up, what... Do you go Cinderblock next and then Fade Away, or is it the same simultaneously, or...
Tim quit Slugfest, and that kind of ended that quick.
Yeah.
And it's a shame, because we were just starting to get, like, steam in Buffalo, where we, like, yeah. could play a show, and there'd be, like, 20 kids singing along and stuff.
Yeah.
That goes away.
But actually, before we leave Slugfest... That reunion must have felt like an amazing... Obviously, by that point, Despair had been going, and you had successful bands, but
yeah.
like it must have felt like a validation at some point. Like, you sold at the show place. Like, that's a big-ass venue. That live sound is just sick, too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I can't put too much emphasis on that one show.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of a thorn in my side, and it's kind of an ongoing theme until Terror... that every band I was in started, built, put a cool record out, broke up.
Yeah.
Which sucked.
Yeah.
But, where are we at?
Well, I guess we're moving on from...
Cinderblock, did you ask about that too?
Yeah, I was saying, which kind of came first?
Kind of the same time.
Okay.
And both of them, both bands I didn't have anything to do with at first. Like, both those bands were... I'm going to go with Cinderblock first, which was Tim of, that I was just talking about, was in Slugfest and stuff. Oh, it must have been during Slugfest, because if it was after, I kind of had a chip on my shoulder against
yeah.
him. So Cinderblock must have came first during Slugfest, and Quicksand was out, mm-hmm. and, you know, they started the band. I wasn't in the band. It was Tim... Dennis, who was in No Joke, later became the drummer of Earth Crisis. Dennis, fuck, man, what's his name? I don't know. Dennis of No Joke and Earth Crisis.
What period of Earth Crisis was he playing drums?
After this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think they saw him in Cinderblock because we played in Syracuse, and he actually started going to college in Syracuse.
Okay.
So pre-Earth Crisis, Dennis, this dude, Phil, who was the original drummer for Fade Away, we'll get to that. So, like, it is at the time where you look at most of these scenes, everyone's in, like, band. Every band
multiple bands, yeah.
They want to play different styles of music. They're just young and a lot of energy. So, Phil's also was the first drummer of Despair, but maybe that'll probably come up in a minute. So, this dude, Phil's on guitar. Tim is on... vocals, two singers, the singer of Discontent.
Oh, shit.
Tom Hardwick, who's a band who hasn't come up. And there was a definite, like, a little, like, brotherhood of bands of, like, Discontent, Slugfest, and Against All Hope. That was kind of our people.
Did you want to put out a record on Round Flat Records, or no? Was that, like...
Who are we talking about here?
You with Slugfest. Just because, like, all those other two bands both did records on that label, and you guys didn't.
No, I think as soon as you got the word from Chokehold, that was, like, you know...
The word from On High.
Yeah. I don't know if Round Flat ever asked us, but...
Sorry, I took you off. There.
No. There's an ad... Oh, man, this is, like, something I can't really remember, but we had also agreed to do a second 7-inch, but in the same time with a different label, and I don't... It wasn't Round Flat, but it was maybe a if you had a label, your friend wanted a label.
Yeah.
So I think it was something like that, and it never came out, but...
Did you record it, or no? Not even record it.
No, there was just ads for it, or I don't even know, but... If Round Flat would have asked us, we would have done it. But
yeah.
They were almost in this, like, more, like, punker world.
Mm-hmm.
Putting out weirder stuff. And I was, like, gung-ho.
They put a Pressure Head, right? In, like...
Pressure Head. Is that a Rochester band?
I think they were Rochester. Maybe Buffalo. No?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe.
But they put yeah. out, they put out them. They put out some weirder stuff, too, right?
He did some good shit.
Yeah.
And cool. Just, like... exactly what a label should be, photocopied covers and stuff. And so the Discontent 7-inch on?
I think so. I'm 90% sure, yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
He was definitely part of the, he was more the Against All Hope posse.
Yeah.
But those were our bands. Against All Hope, Discontent, Slugfest. We would hang out. We would go to Denny's and drink coffee, and there was like the more West Seneca Tonawanda thing, which was like the support, like Garrett from Texas, the Reason they had, and the Snapcase, that was the support thing. There was, you know, the older Zero Tolerance thing, and then there was the Lockport thing, which was the Watchmen, and then Envy, and Lockport definitely fused when Despair came along, because it was, you know, me and Lockport people. But I guess we're getting off track of...
We're talking about the Cinderblock. Did you ever think you were going to go...
six sections of Buffalo.
Did you ever think you were going to go this deep into Buffalo history?
No. And Cinderblock, really, there's a tape of that, too, recording. Have you heard that?
No, I only have the song and the structure comp.
It's pretty bad. The vocals are... It's like wannabe quicksand groovy stuff with two vocalists that neither of us could hit a note of our, you know, to save our lives. But we gave it a try.
The song on the comp's good. I like the song on the
comp.
Yeah,
but I bet... I haven't heard it in, like, probably 10 years, 20 years, but the vocals are so... out of tune.
Yeah.
Just trying to hit notes like Walter, but, like... Dude, you're not Walter, you suck. Like, not even that bad. But again, to giving it some validation, we tried something that wasn't, you know, every band I've ever been in is mosh, mosh, mosh. So it was cool. But
well, it's also like given your side project now, that's like your precursor to what you're kind of doing now. Like, not obviously the exact same vocal style, but like.
This is the first time I actually hit a note.
And yeah, more
it
melodic.
Pretty to my ear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But like, that was your start, Cinderblock.
Yeah, and it was a very short-lived start that was like, yeah, this isn't good. Let's let's go back on the, it's easy to sound like you're really tough. And, but, yes, Cinderblock was a very quick thing. I want to say the band in total probably played a handful of shows. The dude from Discontent was the singer. I don't know if he got kicked out or quit or whatever, but the number two vocal slot opened up, and I got asked to do it or whatever, and we did it and recorded, I think, like a four-song demo.
Who was the first two-singer band in hardcore? Like, what was the first band? Like, what's the successful model that made so many bands?
That's always a bad idea.
I know, and it's so many bands do it.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm trying to think of someone before that. There has to be. There's no way that we... thought of that bad idea, but
no, but it's like, and but then like, you know, you eventually, I guess, Prayer for a Fallen Angel or Path of Resistance is the biggest band in hardcore,
right?
With that format,
they upped it to three.
They upped it to three.
Yeah, it's just like me and my dude want to both sing.
Yeah.
We're not concerned about how it's going to sound. We just both want to be in it.
There's a pre-Dillinger Four band, Anger House, that has two singers too.
I mean, if you take someone like Hot Water Music, who's probably the best band that ever existed in the world, they have a dueling singer thing,
yeah.
But they do it in such a cool way.
Yeah, and it's different than having two guys standing on stage, each holding a mic, which is...
Trying to outdo each other.
Trying to outdo each other with moves.
Yeah.
Do they coordinate dances?
I'm really trying to think, though, who's the hardcore band that... Like, I don't want to think that... That Cinderblock did it first, because that's not even possible, but I can't think of something.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm trying to think. And also, because, like, you know, hardcore is always, like, a proof of concept genre where, like, oh, someone did that, and it's really cool, and it works, so I'm going to do it.
Right there.
Yeah. Or no, well, like, or I'm going to start doing it now.
You know, early Chokehold, they kind of had, like, a tooth singer thing going on. They had, like, a friend that would...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I can't remember his name. He was, like, a... good-looking guy. He was like a littler guy. He had some nice muscles, but...
And he would just get up and do other...
Yeah, he would rock it a little bit.
I was like a little MC.
I'm like totally caught. I'm going, while we're talking, from city to city.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the two.
Thinking of a two-band singer thing. I'm just going to go with, like, let's credit the Cinderblock for making all these...
Cinderblock gets that burden.
That can't be possible, but...
Gets that burden put on him. So Fade Away... also is going at the same time.
These are all very close to each other. These are all like where all you're doing is going to high school and then jamming, doing bands, going to shows, seeing all the, your friends' bands practice. And again, I'm not early in the fadeaway thing. Fadeaway came out, and I remember seeing, and this is where I'm kind of getting, I don't want to say ego, but I'm kind of getting like confidence, where I think, okay, I kind of know what a good band is. I kind of know what a good band isn't. I, you know, played some cool shows. I'm older than some of these people, so I'm kind of like getting all those things. I'll call it confidence. It's probably like a little bit of cocky dickhead too at the same time. Fadeaway comes out and I'm like, this band's good. Like watching them, like they're playing like this cool style of like almost like strifey, really energetic, heart like leaning towards the old, you know, not the metal thing that's going on, but just enough metal to give it the edge that it needs to like keep up with like integrity and stuff like that. They're really good. And that dude Phil, that was their drummer, I don't know what happened, he quit, and they asked me to play drums, and I said yes, and they got a drummer that wasn't the greatest drummer in the world, but, you know, I did what I could, and they had a demo that I didn't play on, and then the first thing I played on is the two-line filler
split.
That's the first vinyl recording of drumming I ever played on. I haven't seen it in a long, heard it in a long time, but I think I did a pretty good job on the drumming.
Oh, I love that 7-inch. And I don't think I knew that you played drums on it until much later, even.
Right.
But yeah, like it's a cool 7-inch, and I think the thing about it that's also awesome is it's like, you know, the fadeaway side is a serious hardcore record that looks of the time. The two-line filler side is a Peter and the Test Tube Babies ripoff that says testicle explosion on it. So it's a
And the musical, what was Two-Line Filler? It was almost like a
pop punk.
Yeah. Like, wannabe like Pennywise or something like that?
I don't know. I would say more melodic than that, like kind of like more Jawbreaker leaning.
Okay.
But that guy, Matt White, could write a pop punk song like nobody's business. Like, right. It's crazy. He's like a genius at writing these pop punk songs.
I feel like there was rumors of them, you know, not to the extent where you'd say today they're getting signed, but they almost got
signed to New Red Archives, which is like, you know, not a huge label, but that was the label that like Swinging Utters were on, Anti-Flag was on.
Okay. And what happened? I heard he was like a little mental, maybe.
I think he just couldn't handle the whole thing. I've met him a few times.
And he is where now?
He's still in Toronto. He's in Scarborough. I met him a few years ago at a party. I haven't seen him in a long time. I want to get him on this podcast. I'd love to talk to him about it. Because, like, he was in Chokehold, but also he, like, could write these incredible pop punk songs where, you know, maybe 10 years later, he could have had, like, a real chart career.
That's kind of like the dude Phil I've been describing. He was in Slugfest. Not Slugfest. He was in Despair, but he was, like, doing demos himself, like wanting to be like Big Drill Car and like, all these things. He was just like more of a musician than any of us, but you know, it's just like it's hard to make that happen. So
oh, it is
probably the same where I was just like,
yeah, like that's the thing, is like you can be the best songwriter in the world, but if it's not that exact right moment for you.
I think Walter's like that, the king of all that, but he just made it happen.
Well, because like Walter, when he does something, it's normally so good that it finds its own audience or almost builds its own scene. Like how many bands, well, you've mentioned yourself doing it. Like how many bands were inspired to do something by Quicksand?
Right.
Doing it. That, or they Gorilla
changed
Biscuit.
I look at bands that changed the whole climate of hardcore. Like Integrity came along and made it so much more metal, but then Quicksand shifted it back where it could be like melodic and totally different, and then like, you know, all these bands that come along, and like then things got weird, and like then like Hatebreed came along and changed the whole thing into this whole new thing. So
yeah,
there are those like game changing bands.
No, there aren't, and that's the thing about it. Like, and that's what I was saying earlier with like the two singers band. It's always like,
have you thought of one yet? Because
I can't think of it. Nausea, but like,
I don't know. That was a female
punk band thing. Yeah. But I can't think of anything, but that's what I mean. Like hardcore, there's always like a band that does something and changes things, and then right. a lot of people are like, "That's what we're gonna do now," right. and they all like
scene gravitates.
Yeah, they all gravitate towards like a proof right. of concept, like oh, melodic hardcore quicksand.
Which I'm sure that. Like Youth of Today was when it went from gritty New York.
Yeah,
to put your fucking Nikes on.
Yeah,
and put the beer down, kid.
Well, actually, that's one thing we glossed over. You wanted to tell a story earlier about smoking weed and drinking beers at a Judd show.
You know, I probably have that phrase embedded in my mind, which it's funny, like Terror, my current band. This is also like probably, honestly, at this point, like 10 years ago, we played a show. It was actually kind of near where I live in the San Fernando Valley, and it was just like this. Terror was headlining, all these bands, Champion played, Some Kind of Hate played, which is Matt Pike, the booking mm-hmm. agent's band. Maybe Piece by Piece, Nick's band played, and like all these straight edge bands played, and all day I was sitting there, and I just heard every band come up on stage and be like, shout out to all the straight edge kids, yeah. Shout out to all the straight edge kids, yeah. And I don't know why, it kind of got to me in a way that, like, when we got up there, I was like, I know this is what I said because I've seen this on video. I'm like, I want to give a shout out to all the non-straight edge kids here because it doesn't make you more hardcore than anyone else here if you're straight edge or not. I saw Judge with beer on my breath and a joint in my pocket. And every kid there that wasn't straight edge that subliminally didn't know he was thinking the same thing as me. It was just like, yes, I've been waiting for someone to say that. Because, like, you know, I think straight edge is the greatest thing in the world, and this is in no way trying to dog out straight edge, but it's like, when you're not straight edge and you hear all that straight edge pride over and over and over again, which I get, it's a very important thing, but, like, all day long, you're just like, fuck, man, am I, like, not living up to the hardcore code here, and I just want to put it out there that, like, you're as fucking hardcore as the next person, straight edge or not, so that's probably why I said the job. But yes, me and my brother were never straight edge. We smoked weed when we were in 7th, 8th grade, stole beers, snuck beers, drank whiskey, whatever, and the whole time going to shows, we would always, you know, sneak around the corner and smoke this, do that. Like, luckily, you know, at the time, there was, in our world, there wasn't anything harder than that. So it was just some weed and some alcohol. And, you know, I can remember going to Syracuse, and that, when I first started going to shows in Syracuse, let's say 91, 92, when started taking road trips there, that scene was legit. Very, very straight edge, vegan orientated, which I was neither, and I was the type of dude that liked to dance from the first band to the last band. So they have this kid coming in, probably could smell the weed on me, going off to every band, singing along. I have no problem singing along to a straight edge band if not being straight edge. Like, if I can feel the energy and understand their pain and their convictions, I'm singing along to it. And I think it took there. You know, some of my good friends now even were like, when you used to come here, man, we weren't really too into it. It took a while. But you accepted this kid. He's fucking into it. He's here all the time. He's not going away. And he's actually probably, you know, and those people have mellowed out and changed. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure a lot of them has sold out. But, you know, there's just that thing.
Was it ever dangerous, or was that overstated by people?
How can I urinate?
How can you urinate?
Like, I have to urinate.
We'll pause.
Yeah, we'll pause. Okay.
It was after the fact. Like, I was roading for the Swarm, I think, the first time I ever went to Syracuse.
I'm going to go with not scary, but fucking awesome.
Fucking awesome, yeah.
Like, Buffalo had its day early on. And not saying it, like, lost its magic, but there was the Buffalo thing for me, but when I went to Syracuse, it was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. But I don't know if I was ignorant to it or just didn't care. And I'm also, I don't know. I feel like I live my life where I don't worry about too much stuff going down. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But I don't think I ever went there, you know. I'd see them with the mad, like the Path of Resistance masks and the moshing hard. But I was just like, if today we're moshing hard. We're moshing hard. Like, I don't think I was ever like really, I want to go with not scary.
Were you at that? What, I think it's Indianapolis.
Integrity. Cleveland was more scary to me.
Yeah.
And I'm in no way trying to dog out Syracuse because I saw some of the best shows of my life there. And the scene there, like, was so good, like I was just saying. But I never got really this scary vibe.
Mm-hmm.
I just got, like, the... You would go there and see people like the Very Distro would be there from Philly and, like, all these people. And it was just... I mean, that's such a different time. There would be, like, these in-between band debates and, like, so much activism and flyering and talking and, like, vegan cookie bake sales and, like such a different world that goes on now, but it not scary, but
perfect. It probably felt pretty empowering, I imagine, too. Like, all these hardcore kids, like, kind of doing shit.
It was so much of a thinking thing. It was so much like there was actually like communication.
Mm-hmm.
But on top of that, there was maybe as a result of that, there was the energy was just insane. The reactions to bands were insane. And I think too, I didn't know this at the time, but you know, becoming friends with some of those older kids, they were going to New York for shows and bringing back like that style of. Mm-hmm. Moshing and stuff, so you know, I was never going to New York at that time, so I think it was like I think going more east from Buffalo, you got closer to New York, and people from Long Island would come there more in Albany, and like it was all like you're getting just maybe closer to the center point of the hardcore that I know, you know, I don't want to give New York every credit, but the hardcore that I really love and grew up on was, you know, New York.
Yeah. So when was the first time, I guess, when was the first time Despair started coming together?
Despair came together, fuck, man. All those bands all seem like the same to me. It was Slugfest, and then everything else we're talking about was kind of all the same friends and stuff.
Just in different arrangements?
Yeah, I want to say the Despair dudes were in a band called Redline,
mm-hmm.
which was an earlier Lockport band, which was like a half hour outside of Buffalo.
Lockport, Gambino, Ford.
Probably. The Watchmen were from there. Watchmen Studios from there. There was a club, Kenzie's, from there. And, you know, you're meeting all these people and...
Is that where Integrity did a crazy show there one time?
They definitely played there.
Yeah.
There was a shift where... There were all the shows, not all of them, but lots of shows were in Lockport for a while.
Okay.
Slugfest. The Slugfest has this live in Lockport, like a tape.
Okay.
Lots of stuff went to Lockport for a while, which was cool for me because where I lived from the suburbs was way closer to Lockport from other people's suburbs. I don't exactly know how it started, probably just like... Slugfest died too soon. I want to keep the singing thing going or screaming. And, I don't know.
And, like, who put out the first? You guys were on initial, but who was on it before?
The first, what happened with Despair was we went... Maybe Watchmen Studio. A lot of bands at this time were, at this time and probably for a lot of years to come, the guitarist of the Watchmen, this dude Doug White, opened a studio and had like a actual understanding of a recording and knew this type of band. So of course you're going to go to his studio. And I'm just guessing the Despair stuff was done there. There's probably a good chance it was. We recorded like... Let's say 9 songs. We wrote 9 songs, recorded 9 songs, had a demo. My roommate at the time, this kid Kurt, this is too when I'm like vegan, kind of like, I don't want to be like overboard into animal rights, but would go to like protests and stuff like that. So I became friends with this dude, Kurt, who was also into all that shit. We had an apartment together. And this is kind of a funny story, actually. So we went and recorded this demo. Didn't put the demo out yet. We just had the songs. He was our friend, went with us. He was a supermarket cart pusher, you know.
Yeah. People,
you go outside and collect the carts at Tops, I believe, in Buffalo, which was a supermarket. And he found this lady's purse. Some lady left her purse. Him like a scumbag, which all of us would have done the same thing, went through a purse and found $1,000 in an envelope or something like that, brought the money home and said, I just found $1,000, let me start a label and put your signature on. So we're like, of course, yes. So we put, let's say, the 4 or 5 best songs on the Despair 7-inch.
Yeah.
And then released first the worst song, the songs that didn't make it. Or I don't know how we figured it out. These two songs sound the same, so let's not put them on the same release. Put the demo out, and that's the start of Despair. At this time, too, you already kind of know some people that book shows and people in bands, so the networking thing, which is the way it should be, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, there's that whole network where you meet people and you have this band sleep on your floor, so when you go there, you can sleep on their floor, and you trade shows and you send them demos to sell, and like just the way it should be. That's the whole thing that's going on. And Despair comes out, and we did okay. Not the greatest band. And then we went to the almighty Trustkill.
Yep.
Which was Josh Grabel. He was in Campfire living. He was from New Jersey going to school in Syracuse. So there's the connection. You know, we'd play shows in Syracuse. He's there for school. Sees the band is starting like what looks to be a semi-serious label.
It became really serious.
Putting ads in. Yeah. Like, you know, you'd pick up zines and you'd see a Trustkill ad. And you'd be like, my ad's in this zine, like, really cool. And he was doing it, like, in a serious way. So we got on that label. First time I ever went to Europe.
Despair toured Europe? Twice. And then also you had a new split with New Day Rising, right? The Despair New Day Rising split?
Yes.
Okay, because that brings up the whole other relationship.
Is that Despair New Day Rising?
There's a Despair, I think, New Day Rising.
Mukau Records.
Mukau Records.
Jim Mukau from Wisconsin.
Yeah, very good. Holy.
I think.
So that's like, because I think one of the things, and I'm not going to
keep... So I got a lot of splits with these obscure...
Canadian bands.
I don't want to say Toronto, but this
Well,
this
I
area.
Think, I think yeah, Southern Ontario bands.
Southern Ontario.
I was going to say, like, because I don't want to keep you too much longer, Scott, because you have to get up early in the morning, and I still have to take a cab back downtown.
Okay. But we're not even...
I know. We got to have you back for a part two.
Man, and we didn't even talk about anything about my stupid bands. I want to talk about cool.
We talked. This is how this podcast goes. When you
is that it? It's just about me?
It's just about you.
Oh, I thought we could talk some shit, but that's okay.
No, we can talk shit in part two because I want to have you back for part two.
Okay.
But one thing that I think we've uncovered here, especially given the fact that you now share a band with Jordan, a Canadian.
I do.
You love... Canadians. There's like a continual thing throughout your... Maybe it's your proximity being from Buffalo.
Maybe it's because I lived like one stone's throw away from Canada.
But you love us.
And those strip clubs when I was young, in Buffalo you had to have like the pasty tits and you could just go to across the... into like...
Windsor?
What is right there?
Niagara Falls.
Yeah, but it's not. There's probably another better term, but yeah. And then it was
St. Catharines?
Tits.
You can see everything.
Vagina.
You can see everything.
And alcohol.
You can see all you want.
I had to get some, like, I sound like this nice guy. You had to let me let loose with some filth.
But I think that's the thing is, like.
Yes, I love Canadians.
Every step of the way, there's a Canadian connection.
Yeah, I think it's like because the border, you know,
border.
I lived an hour from Toronto. I don't want to give you guys too much credit.
Well, I think it's also because you secretly love us, Canadian. Scott, thank you so much for doing this. Let's do a part two. part three, part four. I want you to be my permanent co-host, and we'll go on forever.
I'm just going
to
move. I'm moving here, actually. I'm now here. Canadian.
That's the next thing you have to do. I'm going to adopt you and make you my fourth child.
I'm actually Canadian now.
You're actually Canadian. Well, Scott,
thanks for having me. It's fun to talk about this stuff because I really do, like, really care about hardcore and all that type of stuff.
I know, and that's the best thing about you, buddy.
Yes.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.